All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is February 4th, 2026. And our top story this morning, nobody could have seen this one coming. Private credit got absolutely demolished yesterday. The whole freaking industry. And I'll be honest, I was somewhat caught off guard by it because it was not really the failure mode I expected. I mean, everybody at this point, anybody who's been watching this channel knows private credit is a wretched hive of scum and villainy that was bound to fail inevitably because math. But software? Software appears to be the failure mode here. Now, we did talk about this earlier in the week in some of our streams about how there was an exodus from collateralized loan obligations, how leveraged loans were dropping in value. Anything associated with software was doing very poorly. Predominantly, it looks like because of Anthropic. They came out with some new legal tool earlier this week. Apparently, it's very good. Anthropic disrupting the software space. Of all the bullshit that the AI bubble has created, the one legitimate use case does appear to be AI writing code or generating code. It's not like this flawless, disrupt the whole industry, everybody's going to be out of work. But the one consistent theme I have seen is software engineers saying AI is useful for them. It creates nothing but problems everywhere else. But in the software space, there actually is a risk of disruption. And look, these private credit companies, names like Blue Owl, Ares, both sold off more than 10% yesterday. Blackstone, Apollo down 5, 6, 7%, names like that. The whole space was down. And it looks like they lent heavily to these software companies, especially after 2020 when the stimmy cash was flowing. They're carrying a ton of these loans on their books, and those loans are dropping in value. Nobody wants anything to do with it. Any of these business development companies, BDCs, you don't want to touch them with a 10-foot pole. Now, the interesting thing here is it's not just the funds that Blue Owl and Ares and these companies manage, which, you know, a lot of these funds are publicly traded. This is the parent companies themselves were selling off big time yesterday. Now, these private credit firms, I had somebody ask on Twitter, what does this mean for the average nobody? Private credit firms are basically non-banks. Sometimes they're referred to as shadow banks or non-depository financial institutions, if you want to be excessively verbose, have at it, if you're not into the whole brevity thing. These non-banks act like banks, but they're not regulated like banks. They're allowed to make risky loans that banks aren't allowed to make, especially since the safeguards that were put in place following the financial crisis and the housing crash in 2008. So what's going on is these non-banks are making all these loans that banks aren't allowed to make. Where are they getting the money? From the big banks. They're borrowing money from big banks who aren't allowed to make these risky loans. And then once they have the big banks' money, then they make the risky loans. And you might be saying, well, Jack, that means the big banks have the same risk that they're not allowed to take. Yes, you're exactly right. When they use a middleman, everything magically becomes legal and it looks great on paper. Now, President Trump issued an executive order last year that allowed these garbage loans, these alternative assets, if you will, to be sold into people's IRAs, 401ks, and pension plans. And private credit has been whining and dining your finance guy like crazy for the last year, trying to dump all this dog shit debt into your retirement account. And the fact that all these parent companies started selling off like crazy yesterday tells me these loans are going bad faster than private credit can sell them to unsuspecting investors. In other words, it's kind of like the fire sale at the end of margin call, except they're not moving fast enough and they're losing money. Now, that's just my interpretation of what happened yesterday. Of course, the interpretation from everybody on CNBC is like, AI is so awesome, software apocalypse or whatever they're calling it now. Honestly, I get the software disruption. I think that's valid. I'm not entirely convinced that's the only thing going on because the AI names were selling off yesterday also. We'll have more to talk about that one. I'm not convinced this is just a software problem, though. Also, private credit has a lot of commercial real estate issues. We're going to talk about a commercial real estate story there. The losses are unbelievable in that space. We had a bank failed last week because of commercial real estate, or at least partially. That issue hasn't gone away either, and that haunts the private credit space. Now, another reason why I don't think what happened yesterday was just software related is we also had a big sell-off in Bitcoin. Now, very briefly yesterday, we dipped below a key support level in Bitcoin. They pop back above that level, but watch Binance. There are problems brewing at Binance, and it's not good, guys. Look, first of all, Binance halted withdrawals yesterday. They had a technical issue. Oh, stop me if you've heard this one. Technical problems during sell-offs. How original. Thank you, Sam Bankman, Chingping Zhou. Software issues. We fixed the glitch. The withdrawals have since been reinstated so people can get their money back. But there's two other stories involving Binance over the last couple of days that I think people need to know about. And when you take all these things in aggregate, it really looks like Binance is starting to pull an FTX here. Call me crazy. Meanwhile, we've got gold and silver are rebounding. Gold back above $5,100. Silver back above $91. 2 days now of recovery in a row off the lows that we hit on Monday. But be careful. Look, I like the shiny. You guys know I like the shiny, but there's a familiar chart pattern emerging. We're going to look at that one as well. We've got AMD posted an earnings beat, but the stock is getting clobbered anyway. Very high expectations. They appear to be the victim of that. Lofty promises involving Oracle and OpenAI. What's the worst thing that could happen over there? And then they also snuck some unexpected sales to China into their earnings report. Nobody was expecting any sales to China. So if you strip those out, their domestic sales were lackluster. That stock is selling off pretty big this morning. Supermicro posted a big earnings beat. That stock is ripping this morning. In other news, that company is completely full of shit. They manufactured their earnings beat thanks to a 1,053% increase in accounts payables. In other words, they're not paying their bills. $13.75 billion worth of their bills. And of course, a company with razor thin margins not paying their bills. Yeah, you can manufacture an earnings beat that way. That company is a goose egg in the long term. We've got Intel is getting into the GPU business. Great. The government gave you all that money to build a foundry and you haven't built a foundry. And now you're making more GPUs and we need more GPUs like we need another Fantastic Four reboot. That is to say, not at all. But that's what Intel's doing. We got some NVIDIA news this morning. NVIDIA is nearing a deal to invest $20 billion in OpenAI, as in $80 billion less than the $100 billion they promised, not promised, back in September. Okay, good luck with that one. Kind of disappointing there. NVIDIA's China sales also yet to materialize because of holdups with the U.S. Security reviews are taking longer than expected. So still no H200 sales to China. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. We got ADP payrolls came out this morning. 22,000 jobs added by the U.S. That's kind of meh, not really that good, plus some downward revisions to the December ADP. And look, as far as jobs reports go, that's the best we're going to get this week because we are not going to get the non-farm payrolls on Friday because the government shutdown delayed it. We didn't get jolts yesterday. Shout out to Lox Ganapathy from Unicus Research, who came on the channel a couple weeks ago and told us one of her themes she sees playing out over and over again in 2026 was data throttling. And since she said that, almost every single government data point has been throttled. She was nailed that call, just absolutely nailed it. We've got South Korea is issuing dollar bonds, borrowing dollars. That's interesting. And I'm going to tell you why that has a lot to do with building ships right here in the United States. Stick around to the end of the show for that one. Oh, and speaking of ships and boats and things that go boom, the Iranians sent a drone at one of our aircraft carriers yesterday. We shot it down, and then they sent some speedboats to harass, board, do whatever with one of our tankers, a U.S. flag tanker. But apparently we're playing nice in the sandbox this morning. Everybody's talking, getting along great. Never mind the drones and missiles flying as the world walks backwards into World War III. Guys, we have got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. Red mug today. You can go ahead and hit that so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. And that wake up juice is just fuel for the fire this morning. The S&P is going a whole bunch of nowhere here. Up a measly 3 points, 0.05% higher ahead of the opening bell. The Dow, meanwhile, is in the green here, up 70 points, 0.14% higher, but still well off the highs from earlier this morning. The NASDAQ, though, is in the red once again after a tough day in the NASDAQ yesterday, down another 93 points, 0.37% lower for the NASDAQ, tech leading the way lower again. The dollar is stronger again, 97.57, up another 19 basis points. The DXY has been on a tear for the last couple of days. That's going to put some downward pressure on asset prices this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields barely moving. You know, as much as we've seen gold and silver going wild and all this wobbling and problems in tech stocks and problems in private credit, the bond market has been doing nothing for weeks here. The 30-year yield, 4.913, higher by not quite 1 point. The 10-year yield at 4.289, higher by a little less than 2 points. The 2 years at 3.580, that's higher by not even a point. And the 1 month is unchanged at 3.685. Bonds remain boring, as they should. Looking over at the commodities board, that's where the action is again this morning. We've got spot gold, 5,048. We were almost back to 5,100 for spot gold earlier this morning, higher by $100 or 2%. April COMEX futures are at 5,070 after hitting a high this morning of 5,113. At the moment, higher by $135 or 2.75%. Spot silver back above 90 at 91.67. We hit a morning high of 92.20 earlier, currently up by $6.59, only 7.75% higher for silver. It's a quiet morning. Meanwhile, March COMEX futures, 91.45. They also hit $92 earlier this morning, up by $8.15, almost 10% higher. The volatility in silver is still all over the place. I like the shiny. We're going to look at the charts in a minute, though. Be careful here. Copper lower by 1.2%. It's the one metal that is red this morning. Platinum is higher by 3.8%. Palladium higher by 4.5%. And crude oil is doing nothing here, up by a penny despite the drones and missiles flying near Iran, 63.21 for March WTI futures. All right, let's look at the silver chart. All right, we've got 2 days of nice big green candles here after that brutal sell-off that we saw on Friday. All right, so, hey, is the worst behind us? We're off the lows. We're eating into Friday's losses back above 90. I like to see that. Look at gold, same shape, although a little bit more pronounced. The sell-off wasn't quite as brutal in gold. We're now back to kind of like the middle of where we were Friday. All right, but the same shape of the chart. And the reason why I tell people to be careful here, and look, I'm not selling. I'm not taking any profits. I am hands off the panel and just observing right now. I still own a lot of silver, but I'm not trying to trade this volatility here. And this is why. This familiar pattern. This is the anatomy of a market mania and the ensuing sell-off. And look at right here, guys. Look at return to normal. All right, do you see the return to normal? Now take a look at that gold chart. And now take a look at that silver chart once again. Do you see what I'm talking about here? The return to normal phase. I need to see this recovery go a little bit higher before I get excited about gold and silver again. And now look at all of the labels that they have on the way up here. They talk about media attention, enthusiasm. Let me know if this resembles what we saw through October, November, December, and earlier this month. Greed, delusion, new paradigm. All right. Do you think we heard any shit along those lines, like on some of the, Asian AI guy channels? I think maybe there was a little bit of greed showing there, maybe a little bit of like new paradigm. Every day there was a freaking new paradigm on those ridiculous channels. All I'm saying is stay careful here, guys. Stay cautious. The dip buyers have showed up. They are buying the dip. We'll see if they've got legs, or we'll see, is this just return to normal and fear and capitulation lay just over the horizon? Either way, guys, I still like the shiny. Just keep your head screwed on straight. Meanwhile, Bitcoin, we've got to talk about Bitcoin because we had an interesting breakdown yesterday. Now we popped back above this level. I drew this red line a couple of days ago? This line around 74,400 because that was the intraday low from the big sell-off following Liberation Day and all the panic. We dipped below that level yesterday. We broke down. We went as low as 72,000. Now we bounced. But if you look where we are right now, we're right about 75.1 here. We're down from yesterday. Bitcoin has been very interesting. If we break below this level, I think we're heading to the 50s. Now, there's some things to keep an eye on. First of all, I want to send a shout out to Kirian Von Hest at Deso Games on Twitter. And he posted this late last week. This is very interesting. FDUSD, this is a stable coin, First Digital. It's pretty much only traded on Binance. And almost all of it is controlled by Binance wallets. In other words, this is like Chengpeng Zhou's plaything stablecoin. FDUSD last Thursday traded at an eye-watering 2,185% volume to market cap. All right, there's only 463 million of these things in existence. And yet on Thursday, the volume trading was over 10.2 billion. Every single FDUSD in existence changed hands 22 times on Thursday. And if you guys know Chengpeng Zhou in the history of Binance, and Kirin is correctly calling this out, the entire supply trading back and forth, this is the same entities selling the same assets back and forth to each other, wash trading. All right. This is market manipulation by CZ Binance. Trading this thing back and forth. That was Thursday before this sell-off really got wild, all right? It was Friday, and over the weekend, the sell-off really started to gain steam. Now, a day later, a day after all this wash trading BS, Binance pledges their $1 billion SAFU fund to support Bitcoin's price. All right, I'm going to read a little bit here. Binance announced that it will convert $1 billion in stablecoin reserves held in its Secure Asset Fund for Users, or SAFU, entirely into Bitcoin over the next 30 days. In an open letter published Friday, Binance said the decision was made to support the industry through market cycles and periods of uncertainty, emphasizing its continued belief in Bitcoin's long-term value. SAFU was established to protect users against losses from unexpected incidents like hacks or platform issues. So what are they doing? CZ Binance is using their rainy day fund that's supposed to protect their customers from losses in the event of big breakdowns or security breaches. They're going to use it to prop up Bitcoin, up to $1 billion to prop up Bitcoin. And they've already spent at least $100 million of that based on some of the other articles I've seen over the last few days. So you got all this wash trading going on at Binance. They're spending their $1 billion rainy day fund to support the price. And then yesterday, Binance becomes aware of technical difficulties affecting withdrawals on the platform. Don't worry, guys. All your funds are safe. Technical difficulties. Isn't it amazing? We only ever have technical difficulties when trades are going against the platform. See also cooling issues at data centers when silver is on its way up. Guys, there's a familiar stink here, right? Don't we always seem to have technical problems when Bitcoin is crashing? Be very careful with this one, guys. Be careful chasing Bitcoin here. Maybe Binance is the FTX this time. I don't know. But we almost broke down yesterday, and I suspect that rally that we saw yesterday above that level was probably Binance using more of their customers' money to prop up the price of Bitcoin. All right. Meanwhile, Blue Owl and Ares lead private market firms bashed by software risk. Again, the story is that this was all software. I'm not entirely convinced, but software certainly playing a role here. Some call it the SaaSpocalypse. I wish they wouldn't. Others are saying it's software loanageddon. I wish they wouldn't. Whatever the name, shares of Wall Street's largest alternative investment firms plunged on Tuesday, driven by fears that artificial intelligence-driven disruptions would cause steep losses on their books. Blue Owl Capital, which initially focused on financing software businesses, led the decline, tumbling as much as 13% before closing at the lowest level since September of 2023. Ares Management, KKR, and TPG each fell more than 10% at one point, while Apollo and Blackstone dropped by as much as 8%. The whole space was getting clobbered. The largest leg lower reflects mounting concerns about the fallout that AI will cause among software companies, many of which receive funding from alternative asset managers at lofty valuations. UBS analysts this week estimated that private credit could see default rates surge as high as 13% if the disruption is aggressive. Fears over software have been going back and forth for a while, even before the AI storm, said Wells Fargo analyst Finian O'Shea. Last week, it spilled into the leveraged loan market, and this week, it feels like alternatives and business development companies are catching up. Those fears are now playing out. On Tuesday, Anthropic released a new tool to automate legal work, which sent investors fleeing from software exposure. An index that tracks software shares posted its largest decline, around 15% since October 2008. Loans in the broadly syndicated market have tumbled too. All right, so software apparently is the culprit here. Again, I think AI is also an issue, but all right, let's go with software. Right now, we've got the iShares Software Sector ETF. That was down 4.6% yesterday. It's down another 1.6% ahead of the opening bell here this morning. And look at some of the losses here. We've got Blue Owl Capital ended up closing down 9.7%, almost 10% lower. A measly attempt at a bounce this morning, up a penny. Looks like the selling not done for Blue Owl here. Ares sold off more than 10% yesterday. They're down another dime and change this morning, trading at 131.40. So the losses aren't over for the private credit space, not by a long shot here. And remember, these are the firms that are aggressively marketing the crap on their books to your retirement account. And so it looks like those loans are going bad faster than they can unload them. And a whole other sector, by the way, that is going bad, besides software, besides AI, let's remember the commercial real estate thing is still out there. Shout out to FC Nightingale from Nightingale Associates on X. He posted this one yesterday. A CMBS loan, that's commercial mortgage-backed securities, on World Trade Center 1 and 2 in Denver, Colorado, was liquidated last month, resulting in a $112.7 million loss. That is to say, a 98.5% loss on the loan balance. Look at that. They sold the building. They liquidated it. They were able to recover 1.5% of the value of the loan against that building. That is how much the value of these buildings has collapsed. The property sold for $5.25 million after being purchased for $176 million in 2013. And that's the two buildings that were in this loan. A 98.5% loss on that loan. Are you kidding me that we haven't seen bank failures over this yet? Where are all of these losses residing? Well, I mean, they're pretending, the extended pretend thing, I get it. We're all trying to pretend like these buildings are still worth anything. They're not. But where are the losses? Nobody is marking their stuff accurately. The fraud is so widespread and everywhere. And don't tell me the regulators don't know about this. They obviously know about this. They're not stupid. Well, okay, they are stupid, but they're not incredibly stupid. They're not so stupid such as to believe that these buildings were still worth what the loan was carried at. And they're not going to tell us what these things are really worth until they're done selling them to us. And that's why this private credit collapse can't happen soon enough. Meanwhile, we got some earnings yesterday. AMD is down 9% after reporting earnings. Here's why. Chipmaker AMD dropped 9% in early market trading on Wednesday after its first quarter forecast fell short of some analysts' expectations. They reported revenue of $10.25 billion for the fourth quarter. That topped estimates of $9.67 billion on Tuesday. They said they expect $9.8 billion in revenue for the first quarter, plus or minus $300 million, versus expectations of $9.38 billion. But some analysts had predicted the chipmaker would provide stronger guidance for the first quarter amid an ongoing boom in spending for processors needed to power AI. So that guidance apparently was a little bit disappointing, even though it was better than expectations, according to this language. AMD, alongside NVIDIA, is one of the key makers of AI chips. They've seen their stock surge more than 100% in the last year. First, expectations were pretty sky high, said Susquehanna's Chris Rowland, talking on CNBC's Closing Bell Overtime. Secondly, they announced they shipped Chinese revenue in the quarter. That was unexpected. This was not in the street numbers, so when you account for that, the beat was far less substantial than we would have thought. The chip maker inked a deal with OpenAI in October that could see the startup take a 10% stake in AMD. OpenAI will deploy 6 gigawatts of AMD's Instinct graphics processing units over multiple years, beginning with an initial 1 gigawatt rollout of chips in the second half of 2026. All this crap OpenAI can't afford, all this money OpenAI doesn't have. Apparently, some of this monopoly money is going to AMD, CNBC wants you to know. Oracle, also a purveyor of monopoly money, they also announced in October plans to deploy 50,000 of AMD's AI chips beginning later this year, paid for with money they don't have. AMD stock got clobbered on this news, down 9.56% now ahead of the opening bell after falling 1.7% yesterday, $218.96. But let's put that in perspective. The stock is up over 100% over the last year. So, yeah, it's taking a hit today, but still plenty of room to fall for this one. We also got earnings from Supermicro Computer. SMCI logs record revenue from AI demand and the stock surges. Oh my goodness, Supermicro. That's right, the company's full of fraud. But investors were pleasantly surprised on Tuesday by Supermicro's second quarter earnings as the maker of computer hardware topped Wall Street expectations and provided proof that some delayed orders from last year finally materialized. SMCI, which produces computer hardware and infrastructure, reported revenue of $12.7 billion, which the company called a record and represents 123% year-over-year increase. Adjusted earnings came out at 69 cents a share adjusted for the quarter. Analysts were expecting $10.4 billion in revenue and diluted earnings per share of 49 cents. The company is experiencing near-term margin pressure due to customer mix and supply chain issues, but its focus on enterprise customers supports a higher gross net margin moving forward, said CEO Charles Lang, who's a habitual liar. In a note on Monday, Wedbush analyst Dan Ives, this guy, Dan Ives, this analyst, this is the guy who launched the WorldCoin Treasury Company, just so you know. The guy wears Hawaiian shirts and he likes shitcoins. But he wrote that the recent surges in memory prices could represent somewhat greater headwinds for Supermicro relative to its peers due to the company's opportunistic sourcing strategies. Additionally, while the AI boom has fueled record demand for NVIDIA chip clusters, the high volume business yields thinner margins than Supermicro's legacy enterprise server segment. Supermicro's margins are, here we go, in the neighborhood. Their gross margin was 6.3%, down from 9.3%. And the only reason they even had those gross margins was thanks to a 10x increase in their accounts payables, which means they're not paying their bills. To how much? To the tune of $13.75 billion of unpaid bills. Their whole revenue was only $12.7 billion. This company is hiding their losses. And of course, the one thing we've learned about Supermicro over the last few years is that these idiots will buy this stock no matter what the company tells us, no matter how many times they get caught committing fraud or stealing or lying. These idiots will buy this stock, and they are hard at work this morning, up 11%, $32.92 for Supermicro Computer. The stock is still down about 47% over the last 6 months, probably because remember the whole thing with their delayed reports last year and the short sale report, and they had to change auditors because their auditor wouldn't sign off on their books. Yeah, have fun with this one, guys. All these gains that you're seeing this morning, they're going up in smoke. Meanwhile, Intel is moving into the GPU market and has hired a chief architect, according to CEO Lip Bhutan. I don't know that these Intel GPUs are going to materialize anytime soon. The only reason I even mentioned this article is, number one, more competition for NVIDIA. The AI chip space, the GPU space, is becoming heavily commoditized. NVIDIA's moat is shrinking, which means margin compression on the horizon. But the other thing is, we gave Intel all this money. The government took a share in Intel. They're supposed to be building a foundry. And instead, we're getting more AI chips. We need the foundry because when the Chinese invade Taiwan, we're going to have a choice between either going into World War III to defend them or blowing up the Taiwanese chip industry so the Chinese can't have it. And well, if that happens, we better have our own chip industry. And Intel's dragging their feet on this. We're supposed to be building these big chip factories. Instead, we get more GPUs. Oh, great. Meanwhile, NVIDIA nears a deal to invest $20 billion in OpenAI round. That is down from the $100 billion that they promised back in September. Oh, but remember, they never actually said that, even though they said that. Kind of like OpenAI never said they wanted a bailout, even though they said they wanted a bailout. This has got to be disappointing for anybody who's been paying attention. I mean, they promised these massive numbers, and then they have this big high-profile spout, and now they're like, how about $20 billion? And still here, you know, also Amazon is participating in this funding round, and so is Google. So NVIDIA realizes that they're probably, this is circular financing. Some of this money is going to be used to buy NVIDIA chips, but some of this money is going to be used to buy Google's chips, and some of this money is going to be used to buy Amazon chips and use Amazon's data center. So NVIDIA is bankrolling the competition's revenue here. They don't really have an out here. Nobody has an out here. OpenAI is doomed. This company has a hopeless business model. And they're all, again, like commercial real estate, they're all just hoping they can keep this going a little while longer as they're all selling stock. Also, NVIDIA's AI chip sales to China are stalled by a U.S. security review. This one posted just a few hours ago by the Financial Times. Here we've got Reuters because FT is paywalled. NVIDIA's H200 AI chip sales to China remain in limbo nearly 2 months after President Trump approved exports, pending a U.S. national security review, the Financial Times reported on Tuesday, citing people familiar with the discussions. Chinese customers are meanwhile not placing H200 chip orders with NVIDIA until it becomes clear whether they were able to secure the licenses or what conditions will be attached, the report says. So we've got this ongoing drama of the Chinese H200 chip sales. Schrodinger's chip sales are both happening and not happening at the same time until NVIDIA reports earnings. So I guess we'll see what comes out of that one. Meanwhile, we got ADP private payrolls. And guys, this is the best jobs data we're going to get this week. We missed JOLTS yesterday, and we're not going to get non-farm payrolls because of the government shutdown. Private businesses in the U.S. added 22,000 jobs in January. That's pitiful. That is barely a rounding error. Following a downwardly revised 37,000 in December, which was initially reported as 41,000, and below forecast for a 48,000 job rise. In a lackluster month for hiring, healthcare was a standout, adding 74,000. Financial activities added 14,000 positions, while construction rose by 9,000. Probably all data centers there. Trade, transportation, utilities, and leisure and hospitality industries contributed 4,000. On the other hand, professional and business services shed 57,000 jobs, and manufacturing was down 8,000. That thing, manufacturing down 8,000, that falls in line with the ISM employment indicator that was also in contraction territory yesterday. Again, the reshoring of manufacturing, it's going to take a long time to get here, if at all, and the pain from the tariffs arrives before the jobs do. We've been saying that for a year now. Let's see. Manufacturing has lost jobs every month since March of 2024. Companies employing between 50 and 249 workers added 37,000 jobs, while small firms were flat and large employers were down 18,000. All right, so it's good to see the little guys are hiring at least. Job market continues to be pretty much frozen, guys. That's the takeaway from this one. All right, now this is an interesting story as well. South Korea markets dollar bond with U.S. investments on the horizon. And this has a lot to do with shipbuilders here in the U.S. South Korea is offering dollar-denominated bonds in an effort to bolster its foreign exchange reserves amid global uncertainties and massive investments pledged under a U.S. trade deal. The government is planning benchmark-sized notes in 3 and 5 year maturities, according to people familiar with the matter. Initial pricing for the notes was set at around 13 basis points and about 16 basis points, respectively, over comparable U.S. Treasury yields. The move, which came after the government raised this year's borrowing cap, boosts Seoul's financial ammunition as it prepares for the start of a $350 billion investment pledge to the U.S. in exchange for lower tariffs. The weakening won also has heightened the urgency to fortify buffers, with authorities defending the currency through both verbal and direct market action. Now, we had this $350 billion investment pledge from the South Koreans. They said they're going to make all these investments in the U.S. in exchange for lower tariffs. $150 billion of that is supposed to go into U.S. shipbuilding. The South Koreans have made a lot of investments in U.S. shipbuilding in prior years, and they're supposed to be making very big ones in the future. Right here in my backyard, South Korean company Hanwha bought the Hanwha, it's now the Hanwha Philly shipyard, one of the formerly mothballed shipyards. They have bought that and they've replenished it. They're supposed to be working with General Dynamics to help build submarines. Separately, you've got Hyundai Heavy Industries is supposedly doing these joint ventures with Huntington Ingalls to expand the shipyards in Newport News. By the way, I own stock in both Huntington Ingalls and General Dynamics. And one of the reasons why I bought those stocks was in anticipation of this South Korean money flooding into the U.S. over shipbuilding. Well, there's a problem. The South Koreans don't have enough dollars. And if the South Koreans go trade their won for dollars, $350 billion is enough to tank the value of their own currency. So much so that Forex traders have already started to tank the South Korean won, anticipating that move. And so the South Korean currency has been weakened by this trade deal. And if they want to make these investments in the U.S., they need to get the dollars first. So they're borrowing some here. It doesn't say how much they're looking to borrow, but this is absolutely related to these investment pledges in the U.S. in order to get the tariffs to go away. Now, the other angle of this is there has been talk about swap lines with the U.S. Treasury, which is basically the Treasury and the Federal Reserve loan dollars into existence in exchange for yuan. We do similar things with the Japanese. We already have a smaller swap line in place with the South Korean government. The Treasury and the Fed have been hesitant to put that in place because they don't want to add to dollar inflation problems. But until they figure out how the South Koreans are going to get dollars in order to invest them in U.S. shipbuilding, those investments aren't going to happen. And there's some interesting thing here. The U.S. investment plan has raised concerns about capital flight and reinforced Koreans' appetite for U.S. assets, creating a cycle that further weakens the won. To reassure investors, the government outlined plans to phase in investments through tranches capped at $20 billion annually. Authorities also stressed that funding would rely on investment returns from foreign reserves rather than directly depleting them. Now, this is interesting. I've never read this before, this $20 billion annual cap. All right, the South Koreans said they were going to invest some $350 billion, but now they're saying, don't worry, $20 billion a year. That means it's going to take more than 17 years to make this investment that they've pledged in order to get their tariffs lowered right away. We don't have 17 years. All right. The most important facet of this trade deal is the shipbuilding arrangement. We desperately need that, and we sure as shit are going to need it before 17 years from now, especially because the Chinese are probably going to roll on Taiwan at some point next year. All right. The time to fix this shipbuilding problem was decades ago. It's already too late. This $20 billion cap, if they're serious about that, that is a big problem for U.S. shipbuilders. It's a big problem for the U.S. Navy and for the whole freaking world. So hopefully this South Korean won dollar arrangement gets sorted quick, because we're running out of time to do this. And last but not least, we've got more problems on the water. This is fun. Trump says U.S. talks with Iran are ongoing after a drone shootdown. All right, we had a drone shootdown yesterday. President Trump reiterated that the U.S. and Iran are maintaining diplomatic talks even after an earlier skirmish in the Arabian Sea spooked oil markets amid heightened tensions between the two countries. We are negotiating with them right now, and they'd like to do something, Trump told reporters at the White House on Tuesday. They had a chance to do something a while ago, and it didn't work out, and we did midnight hammer, meaning we blew up their stuff, referring to the June U.S. military strike in Iran. Earlier Tuesday, a U.S. F-35C, that's the carrier-based variant of the F-35, shot down a drone in self-defense as the unmanned aircraft aggressively approached the USS Abraham Lincoln with unclear intent. By the way, that was a Shahid drone. That's a one-way kamikaze drone. The intent is not at all unclear. When a Shahid drone approaches an aircraft carrier, you shoot it the hell down. U.S. Central Command said in a statement, CENTCOM said no American service members were harmed and no U.S. equipment was damaged other than the missile we fired at it. Oil prices spiked to a session high on the report as investors weighed the risks of broader escalation in the Middle East, which provides about a third of the world's crude. Let's see. In a separate incident, CENTCOM said occurred hours after the drone was shot down on Tuesday, it's alleged that Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps harassed a U.S. merchant vessel transiting in international waters in the Strait of Hormuz. Two IRGC boats and a drone approached the U.S. vessel at high speeds and threatened to board and seize the tanker. That is before a U.S. guided missile destroyer in the area escorted the U.S. vessel to safety. And I guess those IRGC speedboats kind of had second thoughts about their goals in life once an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer showed up in the neighborhood. Guys, it just goes to show you that this stuff going on the water, the problems with the boats, missiles flying, world is sleepwalking into World War III. And I just want to say thank you very much. Hey, Mr. Hunt and Cover, he says, Travis, start digging. Okay, this happens sometimes. Hunt and Cover and Travis like to taunt each other to see who can give Jack the most super chats. And I guess when two people fight over who's going to give you the most money, it's probably best to just keep your mouth shut and let them. So why don't I do that? Hey, thank you so much, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. And there he is, as if called to action. Travis says, Hunt and Cover, FTW. Thank you, Hunt and Cover. Thank you, Travis. By the way, guys, check out Real Estate Mindset. That is my bonkers buddy, Travis, over there. Fantastic channel. Travis and Mitch do excellent work, especially fighting the good fight on property taxes. Thank you for everything you do, brother. Black Hat Berg. Black Hatberg. Mr. Hat. No relation to that Chinese guy who stole all the gold, right? Thank you for supporting the channel, Mr. Hat. He says, I want a, if only someone would have told me AI was a bubble t-shirt in the merch. If only somebody had seen that coming 3 years ago. Yep, if only. But remember, guys, the press told you not to listen to me. All right, we have had a call to merch. We'll see if we can make that happen, Black Hat. Thank you very much for being a Melonhead member for 21 months. And we've also got, how do we say that? Metacognitive Diaries sends a, is that a super sticker? Looks like no message attached. Let's see. James is saying, oh, wait, we had one. We did have. Thank you, Mish, for sending this. He says, Metacognitive Diaries says, super. Be careful with the healthcare jobs numbers. Bulk of them low pay PCWs in long-term care facility. PCWs, something care workers. I don't know what the P stands for, but I believe that that they are predominantly lower wage jobs. I do believe, and thank you very much for the super chat, by the way, Metacognitive. I see a lot of month after month, we see healthcare and we see social services are the categories that have the most job gains. And those are not indicative of a thriving, prosperous society, right? The rise in healthcare workers, that is predominantly just a function of the aging workforce. And the rise of social services, that's families that need help because things are falling apart at home. Not a sign of good things. So I agree. I'm not really celebrating those jobs numbers. Thank you very much, Metacognitive, for supporting the channel. And thank you, Mish, for helping get the message across. I appreciate that. Oh, Travis is now saying, Armando, where are you? Travis is just calling everybody out. Hey, Real Estate Mindset, thanks again, brother, for everything you do for the channel. Nacho Man is also calling out Armando. Like the peer pressure here. I have nothing to do with this, guys. This is all organic, I swear. Thank you, Nacho Man. Thank you, Real Estate Mindset. Thank you, Hunt and Cover. And I'm just going to go ahead and say thank you, Armando, too, because Armando does a lot for the channel. Nacho Man says he was last with the yellow one. All right, we'll see. I'm beginning to suspect he may not be last. Travis says, no, I am, in fact, the one who is last. All right, we're doing this now. They're fighting over who gets to be last. All right. Fighting over who's first, fighting over who's last. T-Spin sends a $20 super sticker. Thank you so much, T-Spin. There's a name we haven't heard in a long time, much like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Good to see you, T-Spin. Thank you so much for everything you do for the channel. Nacho Man says, no, I'm last. Oh, no. And you got to get the last word in, right? It's like arguing with my daughter. You just got to get the last word in every time. Thank you, Nacho Man. Hunt and Cover says another log for that fire. All right. I like it. I like it. Thank you guys for the laugh and for supporting the channel. I really do appreciate it. And M&J with the mod stamp of approval saying super chat contest mod approved. All right. Well, M&J says what goes around here. And if M&J is okay with it, I reckon I'm okay with it also. Thank you, M&J, for everything you do for the channel. While we're on that subject, Mission Nan, you too. Thank you to my mods. Being a moderator is a thankless job, but they keep things neat and tidy in the chat for us. Thank you guys for everything. All right, guys, let's see what the private credit names do today. There's Travis, you sly SOBUs, getting the last word in, just like my daughter. Hey, thank you guys for the super chats. I appreciate that very much. Thank you also to my magnanimous melon heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below. Should you feel so inclined, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. Nobody ever expects the Spanish Inquisition. Thank you, Lily Von Stoop. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.